came back. And I guess that's good. I really appreciate the prayers and the kind thoughts that all of you gave to me afterwards. I always appreciate what I call churches that you go to that need help and that are interested in the Lord's Word. You know that when you look at the Bible and you look at Matthew 5, 6, and 7, we know it as the Sermon on the Mount. And I've always said, and I've heard preachers say the same thing, that it's really the constitution of the New Testament. There's so much meat in that. And when you think about it, it gives us so much to lend into our studies and stuff. And tonight I want to do one of the Beatitudes. When you think of the Sermon on the Mount, if you look up at the top there where I've got the blue arrow, that's where they think that he went up on this mountain and the people came. And it says that he sat down. And when they did in the Jewish way, when they sat down, people would come and listen because they said that, you know, these are the scholars. These are the people that are speaking. And when he came and he started, when you look at verse 3, he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." And he doesn't mean that we just get on this pew and we go like this and we clam up. What it means is we understand who we are and we understand as Christians we have a responsibility to know who our Creator is and to study about it. I use three words when I do lessons on it. Blessed are the poor in spirit means I need God. And when we know that and when we understand it, we understand that that's a foundational thing, isn't it? We have to understand that the Bible's important. We have to understand that God's important. And it's interesting, at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount, in the last chapter, he goes back over the person that built their house on the sand and built it on the rock. He did the foundation again. And I call that first beatitude, the foundation. The second beatitude that he talks about is, blessed are they that mourn. If you know that you need God, then you'll be upset about anything that is going against God. Upset with sin, upset with things that are going to be ungodly. And with that, you understand that this mourning is basically a mourning over sin. We shouldn't tolerate sin. We shouldn't be part of sin. Then the third beatitude is, blessed are they that are meek. And a lot of people have gotten strange ideas and kind of compared meekness with weakness, and that's not true. When you look at the word meek, it's really about control. And actually, some of them have made comparisons that you've probably seen in Western movies where the cowboys are doing what they call breaking the horses. And these are horses that are wild, and they're trying to get them tamed so that they're useful. So it's not weakness. It's the use of the strength and the use of the knowledge of that horse that they're trying to get into position. And then the beatitude that we want to look at, and it looks like some of that's not showing up, so that's okay. It's Matthew 5, 6 is what it is. I've got my notes, and I'll refer to them if I can't read it. How about that? Or the slides, let's put it that way. When you look at this particular beatitude, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. It's Matthew 5 and verse 6. What it basically is telling us is it refers to why we do what we do. And you might not have heard this before. It refers to this that says, why do we do what we do? Well, when we think about that, the first way that we think about it, and it's kind of like military or other things, you're ordered to do something. You have to do it. Well, that's not always the best thing, because you and I can't give our input most of the time, and it's something you've got to do. If you're at work and you're told you got to do it, you've got to do it. So it's not the best thing around. Well, the second one is you do what you do because it's an accident. Well, by the very word accident, if we hear the word accident, we automatically think somebody hurt or something going on, and we have no control over accident. But then the third one is the important one to you and I. It's a position that says you want to do something. And when you look at that, it's saying in this beatitude, do we want to do something? And we'll talk a little bit more about it. And really, it's the word desire. Do I desire to do this? And when you think of the word desire, we all see on TV that ads will come on to try to create the desire for you to either buy it or be involved with something. And even to the point that marketing strategies are built around desire, aren't they? For us to desire something. You also notice that most of the time when you go through the checkout line at grocery stores, what's from this part up down is candy. And that's for the little kids to get the desire so they'll put it in the buggy and you'll buy it. So desire is an interesting part of why we do what we do. Well, when you think about this, those words there, what they're saying, and they're in blue, dark, and I'll read them to you. It's saying, what is the nature of this desire? And when you look at that, you can tell, and it's hard to read that, it's hunger and thirst. Now, when you think of that desire, Jesus is talking to a group of people that are poor. These are people that are taxed by the Roman government, and they're being treated unfairly. So they got a lot of things on their back. And now he's talking to them and saying to them, blessed are those that are hungry and thirsty. And they're thinking, what in the world? You know, we know that we used to do sacrifices. We used to do things and had this. Well, he's trying to make them understand how important it is to be godly. So when he does that, when you think about hunger, what he's really talking about on this is you can picture these people coming together in their house. They sit down at their table and they parcel this food out, and it's barely enough to survive. So when they sit down, they're hungry. When they get up, they're hungry. The Lord says, that's what I want you to do. And you say, well, Lord, you know, how do we get over this hunger? Well, he's talking spiritually, naturally. And when you see that, if you turn to Exodus 16, Exodus 16 and verse 3, you're aware of this when it was concerning the manna. And in verse 3, it says, and the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat. We ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out of the wilderness to kill the whole assembly, and then with hunger. Then you see the Lord saying, you know, I will rain bread. And with this bread, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And I'm going to go ahead and read verse 5. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather, because the Sabbath would be a day of rest. Well, when you go to verse 16, it says, Moses said to them, this is the bread, I'm reading part of the other verse. This is the thing which the Lord has commanded, let every man gather it according to his need, one omer for each person according to the number of persons. So let each man do it. So here, hunger was taken care of by the Lord, wasn't it? He sent them in the wilderness for roughly 40 years, but he made sure that they were taken care of. That with this hunger, there was something that was done and the Lord was responsible. When you go farther into the New Testament and you look at John chapter 6, here we see that he's already fed the 5,000. And when you go all the way over to verse 31, it says here that our fathers ate man in the desert, as is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. And then in verse 32, it says, then Jesus says, most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And when you skip over to verse 48, what it says is, I am the bread of life, and your fathers ate manna, and he repeats it, this is the bread that comes down from heaven, which is Christ. So we know that with this hunger and thirst, what he's talking about with hunger is he's the bread. If we're hungry for Christ, if this is something that is constantly on us, and we understand that it's spiritual, these people really knew what hunger was. I'm talking about physical hunger. So when he's talking to them, and then he relates it that he's the bread, it becomes a different matter, doesn't it? It's not that happy are we that we're hungry. It says happy are we that we're constantly thinking about the Lord. Because how many times a day do we eat? First of all, we eat every day, though. So it's not something that just goes away. Well, as part of the nature of that, there was thirst. Now here, you've heard of soldiers going over to Afghanistan and different things. They called it going to the sand and things like that. This is a tough place to be. That water, they would almost take their animals to different water holes to get water. It just wasn't like you and I where they could turn on a faucet. So this thirst issue was something important to them and something that was relevant to their life because they knew what it was to be thirsty. When you think of that, if you look at Psalm 42, David has a real interesting part of this, what we call thirst, in Psalm 42. If I can get my book there. What he says is, as the deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God. That here is, he's building a picture for you and I, that here is the deer that has come through, and yours might say a different kind of animal. And the deer has been running, whether it's from a predator or from a hunter, and all it wants is that cool water. All it wants is something to quench the thirst. And Jesus can furnish that if we will let him. Well, we'll go back to John chapter 4, and familiar passage here that talks about this thirst. John chapter 4 and verse 10. When you see here, Jesus has come to the Samaritan woman. She's saying, why would you come to me, a Jew, and all that? He says, give me a drink. And when you look at verse 10, it says that Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it was who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. So here was Jesus talking about living water. When you go down to 13, it says, Jesus answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. He's talking about the water she was going to give him to drink. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give you will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will come in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. And I read that, and she basically says, well, give me that water. And we do the same thing, don't we? Here we are thinking about this and saying, boy, he's just telling them they got to be hungry and they got to be thirsty and all this. Well, what he does is he says that, first of all, it's a sign of life. When we look at hunger and thirst, if we don't eat, we don't survive. Or if we don't drink, we don't survive. I don't know, some of y'all might know that if what we'd call, if somebody is dried out and they need water, it's bad. It's bad on their whole body. And here's a situation that it's a sign of life, and it means that this person is living. It also is essential to growth. We have to have fuel, don't we, to grow. Now, step back over to the side. What about spiritually? If we're living the correct life, if we're living the godly life, it's a sign of life, isn't it? Well, part of that means that we have to have that hunger and that thirst spiritually to know that Jesus is the bread of heaven, Jesus can quench our thirst, and Jesus will take care of us. Just like the manna for the people in the Old Testament. Sometimes we forget that, though. And when we think about this, part of the beatitude is we've looked at the nature of it. Now we need to see what's the object of this hunger and thirst. And it's something we all understand, but you can't read. It's called righteousness. Sorry that it ended up that way. But it's called righteousness. Now, when you think of righteousness, it's very easy because it's one simple word in there called right. It's being in harmony with God in all we do, isn't it? It means that we are going down that straight and narrow. And what Jesus is telling him, he's not talking about you only get meat once a week. And water is pretty scarce. He's saying, in order for you to be in the kingdom, you've got to have this hunger and thirst for what's right, don't you? And what's right means following what Jesus says, following what God says. When you look at that, if you look at Proverbs 21 and 3, it basically says, and going through it, that it says, with righteousness, it's more acceptable than sacrifice. Now, here's a new thing for these people. Here are these people, these Jewish people, most of them probably Jewish, that have known that sacrifice was always important in the old law. And with that importance of sacrifice, that's how they knew that the sins could be taken care of. But here in Proverbs, and referring to righteousness, it's saying that righteousness is more acceptable than the old sacrifices, which we know in Hebrews, the blood of bulls and goats wouldn't take away sins. It had to be that perfect sacrifice. Well, when you look at the next one, in Psalm 106 and verse 3, it says, you're blessed if you keep justice and righteousness. How much? Just part-time? Just when you're in the church building? Just when things are going good? It means all the time. And when Jesus is talking to them about this righteousness, he's making it so that they understand and compare it to having that same desire that they had with food and with water. And then the last one that I put up here, we're familiar with Ephesians 6, because here Paul says put on, what, the full armor, didn't he? He didn't say, well, just put on the shoes today because we're going to be in wet weather or whatever. What did he say? He said for you and I to put on the full armor. And the only offensive weapon was what? The sword of the Spirit. But what protected our heart? And what protected our lungs? And what protected our main organs? It's the breastplate of righteousness, is what Paul is saying. So when we put on that armor, we're protecting that righteousness armor. And we're protecting ourselves. And he doesn't say, well, just, you know, wear it when you have to. He says, put on the full armor of God. Because we're fighting against a different principality armor. We're fighting against something that you can't always see. Well, there's a catch to this. Here he's talking to them that you've got to be righteous. But with this catch, let's see if you can read it. On the bottom, it's an issue that says we've got to, let me see what I put up there. Oh, it's Matthew 5:20. Matthew 5:20, he tells them that your righteousness needs to be greater than what? Which is odd. The scribes and the Pharisees, doesn't he? Because if your righteousness is not more than theirs, you can't get into the kingdom. So he carries that through with them. But again, there's a catch. There's a result of satisfaction that we'll talk about. But the important part is, and I'll talk about satisfaction in a second, we have to eat and drink ourselves. He didn't say that to him, did he? But we know that I can't eat for you, can I? I eat enough as it is. I don't miss many meals. But I can't eat for my kids. Now, I can work with them and help them eat spiritually when we transfer it into the spiritual by helping with Bible studies, making sure they're getting, you know, into Bible works for their for the grandkids and everything else. But you have to do it yourself. And the Lord's point to them saying, you don't have a priest to make sacrifices. You have to make sacrifices. You have to be hungry. You have to be thirsty. And he's saying, as I had on there, that the result is satisfaction. You know, we're getting closer to having our Thanksgiving meal. Probably none of us go away hungry. There's always, these ladies are such good cooks here in the South that you don't ever walk away hungry. And that satisfaction that we get is what this beatitude does for us spiritually. And part of it is that we have to more or less take a self-evaluation. Am I doing everything I can to be hungry and thirsty for God's word or for God, period, for things that are righteous, for things that are important for us spiritually? If not, we need to change, don't we? We need to think about where we are and what's going on in our lives, because if you don't have this spiritual thirst and this spiritual hunger, then you're going against what God said in these Beatitudes. Because he says, and it does for you and I, we have to eat. Some eat two meals a day. People will stay on time and eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and everything else. We never miss that. And that's what he's saying he wants from us. He wants us to have that desire constantly, basically saying, I'm hungry all the time for the word, to be fed with the word. I'm thirsty all the time to be righteous and be, you know, get the drink from Jesus. And if we're not, we're missing something. Well, when you think about the satisfaction and you think about what he's talked about, it really comes down to us asking ourselves, when will we live the Christian life? And that's something you have to ask yourself. If you're not living that Christian life, why not? We would say. But the question is, with this beatitude, why aren't you hungry and thirsty for what God says? Well, when will we do it? It's a very easy answer. It's when we want to. You remember when we first started, I said, you have to, you do it by accident, but the better part is you want to. That's what God wants. He wants us to desire that word of God. He wants us to desire righteousness. And when we think of our lives, that's what he needs us to do. When you think about this beatitude, if you haven't obeyed the gospel, why not? Yeah. When will you do it? It'll be when you want to. You know, each of us is going to bear our own burden. Each of us is going to stand in judgment. I wish my wife could stand for me, or I wish certain brethren that I've known over the years could stand, but that's not going to work. It's going to be you and I, individually. And we will be judged on our hunger and thirst. We will be judged about our righteousness. And if you've not obeyed the gospel, you're in a bad position already. You're in the desert with no water and no food. And that's not a good place to be. The other part of it is, here was Jesus talking to these people. He was talking to a people that had grown up with the old law, had learned the old law. You've got to give them a little bit of credit. They were used to doing the old law, but now he's changing it. He's changing it from the law of sacrifice to the law of the heart. And that law of the heart required that they change their ways. And the same thing with us. If we're in sin or we have problems with sin, we need to take care of it. We need to make it right so we can get back to this constant desire for righteousness. If we can help you tonight, think about what I've said as far as this beatitude and make an adjustment in your life while we stand and sing.